are live on Blog Talk Radio for Sports Club. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio, thanks to Impact Media for allowing us each and every Thursday to come on live, talk sports with you guys, and just generally have a good time. This week, I am very happy to announce that joining us once again off their great summer vacations, and there's no telling how many travel points one of them has, but joining us again this week is the coach, Haywood Hill, and the King ATLian himself, Reggie Walker. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Jeremy. Glad to be back.
Wow, and Cody will not be able to join us. He is at the Oakland A's game currently, where he said it is 21-2 Oakland. If only the Raiders could score that many points.
Shots fired.
Right. But
early.
Yeah, we're gonna get into a California related debate here in a little while, and I'm not even gonna include the Raiders because I'm already considering them Las Vegas because they are already big a show, and literally that's John Gruden's team right now.
I agree.
Just tons of stuff to get into. They wish they had Elvis. At least at that point, they'd sell more tickets. But I am not. I promise I am not going to bash the Raiders that many more times tonight because they're just not on the sheet.
Oh.
Well, they are. I just saw them. They have a small note. While we're at it, yeah, let's start there. The Raiders, who led that entire game against Denver, all the way up to 0.6 seconds to go when the Denver field goal kicker puts one between the uprights, they end up losing that after being up so early. The Raiders are now 0-2. Where do they go from here? Coach, we'll start with you.
Well, the only thing they can do is try to look up. When you're on your back, you have to look up. And if you can look up, you can get up. So, you know, I think right now there's a lot going on with them. I'm surely on the player's mind with the move, with also losing Khalil Mack. I'm sure that they just got to try to find their niche again through their leadership and the team. So, you know, once you start out like that, and, you know, naturally they're not the only team that's in this position, you have to quickly begin to assess what you need to fix, because with the schedules being so tight now and you playing a lot more conference and divisional games throughout your schedule, you don't have room for a lot of error like that. So I'm sure that they're going back to the drawing board. And plus, you must understand their head coach is just now getting back into football. It's different when you're doing the X's and O's and you don't have to go and take that now and make that transferable into a live game. So now he has to get back after a long hiatus and get right back into the swing of it himself and understand how the new players, you know, perform to his philosophies, which I won't say are antiquated by no means, but again, you know, it's just an adjustment because he's been out of physical coaching for quite some time.
All right, Reggie, how do you see it?
I mean, Coach made the last point my biggest point is again, they're adjusting to Coach Gruden returning to the game. It's interesting, some of these old school coaches, you have to be a little bit careful with some of these guys. I guess my opinion is you know, these guys, this is a different game, right? So coming in coaching these guys, they aren't like college players, right, that you can kind of talk to any kind of way. These guys are making massive amounts of money. And I really kind of, you know, take a look at this Khalil Mack thing. I think, you know, that has a lot more to do with it than maybe meets the eye. Because when you lose a player of that caliber, you don't know what type of leader he was on the team. You don't know if he was that guy that sparked the defense, which in turn sparks the offense. You know what I mean? So he could have been more of just a role player. And for the way that they dealt with him, or the way Gruden dealt with him specifically, has to resonate through that locker room. So I sometimes wonder how much respect or lack thereof there is in the locker room for what Gruden and what type of coach he is. So I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah. And an update, Cody just sent me a stat. I'm going to throw this out there to you guys. Which is higher, the number of runs the Oakland Athletics have scored in the last two games, or the number of points the Raiders have all year.
Oh wow,
it's close. I'll give you that. It's really close.
I'm gonna go with the first. I'm gonna go with the number of runs. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
The Oakland A's have scored 31 runs in the last two games. The Oakland Raiders have scored 32 points. So the Raiders actually are winning right now by one.
Okay, wow.
Wow.
What a stat to compare, though.
Right? But, yeah, we definitely shout out to Cody Elias, even though he couldn't join us, that he gave us those incredible stats and updates. That, see, always contributing to the show. That's what we always do, and that's what I tell people, even when we're not on. But, yeah, the Raiders, as far as I think a lot of Oakland fans are concerned, they might as well be in Vegas. I agree. As much as I like John Gruden, that I just – he's just out of touch. He's got to get into reality. I think he still thinks it's somewhere in the 90s, and that kind of coaching style just doesn't work nowadays. It's – you know, no matter how good a coach you are, it's even if John Madden came back, it's even if Bill Cowher come back. There's a reason why, you know, Mariucci decided to stay in the booth, because he's like, no, why do I want to work 24-hour days, 5 or 6 days a week, when I can just talk about sports for 4 hours a day and not have to worry about that headache and keeping up with the latest ways to treat ankle sprains and things like that. So, I mean, I'm glad Gruden come back, but it's going to take him a while to find reality.
That's why he has
we'll see. Right.
I was going to say,
he has
a 10-year contract that's pretty much guaranteed, so he has plenty of time. And at some given point, I think there's going to be some shifting in the atmosphere. I'll predict that there will be some shifting in management after 1 year in Vegas, and at that point, he can make some different decisions from a different office.
Yep, I definitely think so. Let's move. I don't quite want to hear Coach hit a higher note than he usually does, so I'm gonna wait on where I was gonna go. Now I want to start into this debate. Right now I want to compare the football teams of the state of Florida and the state of California. And once again, I'm not gonna include the Raiders in this discussion because I pretty much already moved them to Vegas in my head. Plus, that way it makes it 3-3. Right now, the state of California has a team in the Rams that are 2-0. They have the Chargers that are 1-1. Those two teams play each other this week. That should be fun. And they also have the 49ers who are 1-1. You look at the state of Florida, all three of those teams, the Jaguars, the Dolphins, and the Buccaneers are 2-0. First of all, did you guys see this coming? And second of all, is the state of Florida really better than the state of California right now?
I'm gonna take a stab at it. Jacksonville, I believe in. I think defensively, they are that team. I'm still not a Blake Bortles fan. I think he's a game manager at best, and will undoubtedly be the reason why they don't win it. Right? I know they say defense wins championships, but I just don't believe in that kid. If Fournette could stay healthy, it'd be very different. Now, Tampa, I think is fool's gold. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick has done this at every point in his career. He's Fitzmagic, and then the wheels will fall off. And then they'll try to pull Jameis back in week 6, 7, right, which is when I think the wheels will fall off. And they'll turn into that team they were, right? Same with Miami. I just don't feel like Miami is – it's fool's gold right now. Yeah, so I'll leave that at that. And California, again, so you say the Rams – I think are the real deal. The Chargers, I think, are the real deal. I think they, you know, adjustments. San Francisco, I'll never root for those guys ever again. Not as long as Shanahan is the coach, so I'll push that aside. He lost me my Super Bowl, so I'll never be friends with him. And then we've talked about the Raiders, right? So that's my two cents. I don't think there's – you know, I think Jacksonville's the real deal and the Rams are the real deal and the Chargers. So I still think California has the edge.
All right. And, Coach, I will allow you to either go into the directions of either one Ryan Fitzpatrick or into that the 70th best quarterback in the league, Blake Bortles? Whichever direction you want to go here.
Okay, let's start with Fitzpatrick. I do agree with Reggie that Fitzpatrick is one of those kind of players that kind of comes out. But I think the difference this time in him is that he's taking on a personality that he's never shown before. Somehow he's gotten a swag about himself, and I think that Tampa will believe in that. I think he's kind of taking on the persona of the MMA fighter, McGregor, if I'm saying that correctly. He's kind of taking on a character of that nature. And I think that's kind of giving him some confidence, or his alter ego, as I like to call it right now. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think Reggie is right. Somewhere around week five, week six, we'll know the truth about that. So, but if they keep it up and they kind of follow behind this character that he's putting out of himself now, I think they can hold on. Again, when it comes to Miami, it's a hit or miss with them. They can start out fast. They can start out lukewarm, but they're always right there in the middle of the pack. So it'll be interesting to see, again, what they do. I'm waiting on them around week eight to really show their wherewithal as they get to the back end of their schedule. When it comes to Bortles, well, let's just say I said a lot about Jacksonville about 4 years ago. I kept telling everybody to watch them. They were on the radar. They were coming. They have arrived. I do think that Bortles could be a little bit better, but he's going to improve as long as the defense continues to do what they do. I think Fournette helps them, but then again, without them, this gives Bortles the opportunity to prove that he's the guy that is under center for them. So I think that he's going to step his game up. I think he's the guy that I think that he's going to be, and I stand behind that. When we go to California and we roll to the other side, again, I think that Shanahan and the 49ers still have some things that they must do. I do think that I do agree with Reggie that the Rams are the real deal. They have that progressive thinking, new age era coach to get them over the hump. And I think that the Chargers are a consistent team. And I think they went through just a transitional period last year with a coach, but now they kind of know what needs to be done, and they have that team that can get it done. So I'm looking forward to see what they do as well. So right now for me, I would agree with Reg. I think California has the edge right now, and we'll be able to see the difference probably within the next 3 weeks.
Right, and it's nothing personal to Miami fans, and I want to give them all the credit. You guys are 2-0 when a lot of people thought you guys would probably be 0-2 by now. But I think that first win they had, that game was like 6.5 hours long. It took forever because of the lightning delays and stuff. So that was more of a war of attrition. They're probably better suited because they practice in the Miami weather, that they just kind of outlasted their opponent. So you probably should be 1-1 at this point. But at the same time, you know, congrats on them being 2-0. But, yeah, I agree with you guys. The state of California, I think, in the long run is going to be probably 6-8 games better than the state of Florida. But let's see. We kind of hit Fitzmagic there. We kind of hit Blake Bortles. And before the text line blows up again, I am just echoing what Chris Sims says, that Blake Bortles is the 70th best quarterback. I don't believe he's that low, but I don't have him as high as some people. So just to throw that out there,
you have to consider your source. We're talking about Chris Sims. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He's probably
extraordinaire.
Yeah, he's probably the fourth best quarterback in his family. So, I mean.
Right.
Oh, boy, y'all are relentless tonight.
Yeah,
we're fired. I am happy to have you guys back on, because usually I just send shots and there's nobody on the other side. It's just the listening audience. So, I mean, it's good that with you guys on, I know I can send these around.
Right. We got you back.
And by the way, if Chris Sims won't come on the show and defend himself, and I would love to have Chris Sims on, actually, I just need a prior notice, because he's been known to, even on his own radio show, drop a few F-bombs, and I have to warn the audience if that could accidentally happen. So, Chris, if you're going to be on, let us know. We'd love to have you on.
Yeah, give us a couple of weeks to try to find some stats on you. Anyway,
oh wow! Really?
I do know that he is one of very few quarterbacks to ever start a game in the NFL without a spleen.
Oh wow!
Okay, well, he does have a Hall of Fame moment then. There it is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when they showed a highlight film on Pro Football Talk of his five best throws, he said that's probably two more than he could come up with. But, no, he played for the Buccaneers, and I can't think of who. But he got just hammered in the background, and he kind of got up wobbly. They brought him to the sideline. They check him out. Like, he goes back in. He gets hit again. They take him all the way into the locker room, I think. They kind of check him out. He's still kind of acting funny. Come to find out, he ruptured his spleen. So he almost died on the field at that point. But he finished that game and then missed a couple games and came back in. His coach happened to be John Gruden at that time.
Oh, wow. But there you have it.
Interesting.
But I think we actually have a caller. So I'm gonna check and see if the caller wants to add to our conversation real quick. Caller, you are on Sports Club. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good, man. How y'all doing?
Doing pretty good. What's your name? Where are you from?
Yeah, this is Naj. I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Well, what you got, Naj?
Yeah, well, the Fitzpatrick thing, I don't even see why people are talking themselves into this, man. He's a bad quarterback. He always has been. He's a risky guy. So he has these hot streaks to where, you know, he'll really play well. And if you give him a contract or you expect that to last for the whole season, you're going to be sadly mistaken because he's going to start throwing pick
right.
sixes and things are going to go bad.
Uh-huh.
So Tampa,
mm-hmm.
right. fully expect the full Fitzpatrick experience because it's coming. Blake Bortles,
right.
he's not good. he never was. He's kind of a glorified game manager because they have, you know, great defensive pieces. But the problem is he's not good at being a game manager, which is why the AFC Championship game, they didn't trust him enough to try to go for those first downs and really, you know, go to the Super Bowl. They were better. They decided they were better off punting the ball and trying to play good defense and hold on. That's really telling that the whole building doesn't have true faith in that guy. So, I mean, they got a Super Bowl quality team. It's just how much, you know, is going to be dependent on him. Is going to determine how far they go. So, you know, I just think themselves into somebody being a lot better than what they are when, no, man, some of these guys are bad quarterbacks. So, you know.
Well, and here's
the thing with those two.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the thing that Buccaneers fans don't realize is that Dirk Cutter is just a good enough coach to he's no matter what Fitzpatrick is doing, as soon as Jameis is available, he's going to put him back in. So at this point, instead of riding with the hot hand, Buccaneers fans have that to look forward to. So that's why Reggie is a Falcons fan and us generally on this show, we all know that the Fitzmagic train is going to end pretty soon.
Yeah, and let me just say this about the hot hand. When you go play blackjack and you hit a couple, do you think that that is a skill or do you think that you just happen to hit a couple right there? So with guys like Fitzpatrick, man, you ride the good part of the wave and then you get him out of there. But if you think, you know, you can just keep rolling, okay, take your whole paycheck to Vegas, man, if you think that's possible. I don't.
So Naj, let me ask you a question about that because Deshaun Jackson came out, who has been a ghost since he came to Tampa Bay until this year. But
yeah,
he's come out and been very vocal. Yeah, he's been very vocal about what he feels like they should do with the quarterback situation. How do you think that's going to affect Jameis? Well, will it matter?
Hey, I don't think that matters at all. Chris Godwin is going to be Jackson's replacement. I don't think Jackson has much say about how things go. But, that's the most self-serving comment you could ever find. This guy who likes to throw deep balls and risky passes who benefit me, I want him in the game. Yeah, no ish. Deshaun, I'm sure you
right.
would like him in the game. I don't think that actually means anything except Deshaun Jackson wants to keep catching bombs.
Yeah, definitely.
I
and
like
Naj, before we let you go, and feel free to even though we won't have you as an active caller, feel free to keep listening in. We definitely appreciate it. Who is your team, by the way?
Well, I'm down here in Atlanta. I'm a transplant, but I've kind of taken on the Falcons since I've been here. So, you know, I roll with the birds,
all right.
man.
All right.
There it is. Well, my man.
indeed.
Reggie has a new friend.
Yeah. But, Naj, we definitely appreciate the call. Definitely don't be a stranger. We appreciate you listening anytime. And anytime we see you up on the call list, we're probably going to swap over and talk to you for a few minutes.
Absolutely.
That'll work, man. Y'all have a good one.
Hey, you too.
All right, you too.
But there you go, Naj from Atlanta. Reggie's got a new friend. I'm sure in between
yes,
the shows, Reggie, I will pass that information to you. So in case you want to invite him out to the Gulch one day, that's all on you. But no, a great call, by the way. And I know he's still listening.
Yes.
Now,
very,
he has
very
some good points, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fans, and I love how well they educated themselves.
Yeah.
20 years ago, it was just win or lose. Now fans get into statistics and all the analytics
exactly.
of the game. So it was great to have him on and have him give his perspective from a fan's point of view as to what he sees, you know, just across, you know, a sport that he loves in football.
Oh, yeah, and the blackjack reference was dead on. I like that one. I might have to use that one around the water cooler tomorrow. But let's see. What can we get into? There we go. Let's get into this. Frank Gore passed Curtis Martin for fourth all-time in rush yards over the weekend. I know we've debated this before, or not really debated. I think we all agree Frank Gore is a Hall of Famer. But at some point, why did Frank not get the credit he deserves? It seems like nobody talks about Frank Gore all the time. And I know a lot of people say maybe he's a compiler, but if you look at some of the teams he's on, he has a lot in common with Curtis Martin as far as he was never quite on the best team all the time and yet gets all these yards. So there's something special about him.
Yeah, there's definitely something special about him. I mean, he was always the bigger piece of a lot of puzzles, I guess, if you
mm-hmm.
really look at it. Even in San Francisco, there was just so much. There was always so much going on around. I kind of really look at his contribution a lot like I look at that of, you know, Emmitt Smith, right? In that he wasn't the only guy, but he was the guy that mattered, right? Just the fact that he's able to still do it, and he's that's the one thing I can say about Gore. Gore was able to perform at a high level throughout his career. You know, even after injury, he would come back, and that next year he's
mm-hmm.
a 1,000-yard rusher. He'd go out on
right.
injury, come back, he's a 1,000-yard rusher. You know, even now, you know, he's still showing those things. So I don't really know why he didn't get the accolades that he should have gotten. I know he was talked about a lot at Miami when he
mm-hmm.
was there, but he had other guys like Portis and some of those other guys around him at the same time. So. But he definitely is a Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned. I'd be surprised based on everybody else they're letting in. I can't see why he wouldn't be a candidate as well.
You know, I agree, Reggie. I think one of the situations with Gore was the fact that he was always on teams where they had those other players. But he always contributed enough to make himself valuable, although he wasn't one of those star guys. So he didn't have the stardom around him, but he always had the consistency in him. I think that's what gives him his edge and has given him his longevity in the NFL. As you stated earlier, he's always been a 1,000-yard rusher, even after injury. He's shown his self-worth. He's played hard. He's been consistent. And I think, again, that has attributed to it. But I think, again, to add to what you were saying, I think the nuance to him has always been that he's been on teams where they always had those players – and he just was a big piece that was fitting into a bigger picture. The picture sometimes bigger than the frame, but he never was able to just get that stardom role or get all of that light shine on him as he probably should have, or at least, you know, the commentator should have spoke a little bit more about him outside of just his consistency. Just what he's been able to do over his career speaks a lot of volumes.
Yeah, it's I guess, you know, that it's up to us, people like us, to talk about Frank Gore, because, yeah, I really just – I don't know if it is one of those things. Maybe it's because he doesn't have one of those big personalities that he's just, you know, normal Frank Gore in the backfield that, you know, a lot of people don't flock to him. But everything he does, any team would be glad to have Frank Gore on their team. That's why he's usually not unemployed for more than about a week. And then the team that let go of him realizes how dumb it was. But – I don't know how far he is away from third, second, and first. I don't think he's going to catch Emmitt or Barry if they're first and second. I would imagine they are. But, I mean, he's already top four in rush yards. I think he's top 10 in rush touchdowns or something like that. It literally is going to be – he should be a first ballot guy.
Yeah, he should. He should definitely. And that, you know what, that, the point you made about his personality, I think probably has a lot to do with it as well. I didn't think about that part. He wasn't looking for the highlight, right? He didn't want to be the talk of the. He just got it done. That lunch pail guy, man. I mean,
yeah, he's just Frank. Just,
yep.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear him talking to reporters a whole lot, and when he does, he just, you know, he says what needs to be said and stuff like that. And, you know, I respect guys like that. We all love the big entertaining personalities, the Le'Veon Bells and stuff like that. But you know, I think we're kind of seeing. I don't really want to compare these two, but kind of the new Frank Gore of the league is kind of Todd Gurley, because Todd Gurley's not one to talk a whole lot on the microphone. So he goes in there and he gets the job done, and at the end of the day points to the scoreboard, and that's all that matters to him.
Right. Right.
But, you know, I mentioned Le'Veon Bell, so let's just go straight into that. The question that I have for you guys is, Le'Veon Bell and ultimately Antonio Brown, now given this week, are those situations affecting the Pittsburgh Steelers play? Because I tend to think it's bugging them whether they say anything or not. It just the Le'Veon thing not so much, but now Antonio Brown missing days just because he wants to. I think it's not a contract dispute. He's just frustrated because I think they're 0-2 at this point. But I mean, I don't know why he would be that frustrated. They're all playing well. They have no defense.
Yeah, I think this stems from a story that I heard more so around the lack of discipline or control that Mike Tomlin has over the team. I think that's where the initial spawn is from. Now, from a Le'Veon perspective, I think it's obvious that him not being there or his absence is definitely affecting the game. Or affecting their game, right? James Conner had he's a great story, had a great first game, second game not so great. He's just not Le'Veon Bell. And after overtime, I think through some reps and whatever, he'll get better, but he'll still never affect the game, or more importantly, the defensive game plan of the other team, because nobody's scared of James Conner, right? But
no.
Le'Veon Bell's a whole different animal. Now, as far as AB, I think, again, he's a victim of his own ego, right? And, and I've heard that about him, is he's that guy that, you know, social media, apparently he's got some issues with control. And, again, you start to eat your own dog food, man, it can get tough. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because you put a guy with a super diva ego like that coupled with a coach with no discipline, and no control, it's going to get worse before it gets better, I think.
Well, and Coach, before you chime in there, I think any day that you're eating dog food is just probably not your day. So, I mean, you know.
It's funny, Coach. It's true.
Yep, I guess it is, Homer. But go ahead, Coach.
Yeah, let's start with Le'Veon Bell. My grandfather used to say all the time to me that when you walk into a room, if your presence is not felt, then your absence does not matter. And that is the case with Mr. Bell. I think that because he's not there, that now you're starting to feel the team is starting to be under this crunch. As we go, and again, you know, you understand football is also a business, so I understand the business aspect of that. When it comes to Antonio Brown, I think one of the things he's starting to suffer what I call the receiver era, and that is he's turning into that star receiver that you've seen time after time again that comes through the league that ends up getting caught up. I think he needs to get back to basics with inside of himself. I'm sure with his father being a former pro athlete, will be able to probably have a conversation with him and kind of help ground him a little bit. You know, now that you don't have the 1-2 punch of himself out in the aerial attack and Le'Veon with the ground attack, you're starting to see some things splinter. Now, when it comes to Coach Tomlin, I don't think it's a disciplinary problem at all with him, Reggie, when it comes to his ability. I think maybe there's some shifting in the atmosphere administration-wise that might be taking place that might be kind of arresting him in a sense with all that's going on, because he is a disciplinary coach. I mean, prior to this, there were no issues, there were no problems. And now all of a sudden you're starting to see issues and you're starting to see problems. And I think that might be coming with some things that might be happening from an executive standpoint that might be saying, hey, you know, this is where we're going to take over and have these conversations, or these are the things we want to see you kind of ramp down instead of ramp up. So it's going to be interesting to see over the next two games how his body language speaks to that on the field. And, you know, as coaches, we're always taught to kind of have this poker face look and never give anybody anything to read. But again, 80% of our communication from a psychological standpoint is nonverbal. So we're going to be able to kind of see. But right now, his stoic look can go either way. It can go with the frustration of what he has in his locker room and with his personnel, or it can go even higher as it becomes an administrative situation. And again, you know, he's had to fight for that job for quite some time in the face of Pittsburgh, where they wanted to, you know, punt him a couple of years ago. So, you know, it's a lot going on there. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out in the wash later. I mean, I'm sorry, what comes out in the rinse later with this situation in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually defended Pittsburgh in kind of that sense the other day to some Dallas fans. And I said, look, we need to keep an eye on the Cowboys before they turn into the Steelers, because you got a highly talented team. There's just talent just spilling everywhere up there. They need to do some stuff on defense, not necessarily add people, but they need to move some people around, I think. But you got one of those motivator coaches who are very smart, knows the game, but he's known as a motivator. He's known as friendly, a player's coach. You get some things moving around the front office, and you kind of get this situation where all these egos. Antonio Brown has like his own social media show, which is, I think, part of why he's doing this kind of stuff. He's promoting himself through these other avenues. And, you know, Big Ben's always going to be Big Ben. Le'Veon's always the different thing. You got all these big personalities. It's just a powder keg waiting to go off. And, you know, Dallas has got to watch it so that they're not the next Pittsburgh, even though they'd love the success. But I think we're going to have to keep an eye on it, because I don't think Mike Tomlin's going anywhere. I don't think Big Ben's going anywhere. But we know Le'Veon's not going to be back next year. Maybe they try to do something different with Brown down the road instead of paying him again.
And that's a possibility. That's a possibility, Jeremy, that all of those things that you say will play themselves out. But right now they just have to get through the season the best way that mm-hmm. they know how. And, again, you know, I hope that they get the situation with Le'Veon Bell worked out. But, again, because players have spoken out on that situation and you have some other things like that going on, it's just going to be very interesting. They got a long, long season ahead of them right now, on and off the field as it pertains to Pittsburgh right now.
Oh, they do, and the Steelers' season got longer basically over the weekend as they tried everything they could. They scored 37 points. The only difference is Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs scored 42. But speaking of Mahomes, what are the early kind of takes you guys have? Reggie, we'll start with you, kind of on Mahomes. I think the kid has a lot of Brett Favre in him. There's not a lot of throws that he doesn't think he can't make. I think that helps him, because Andy right. Reid was around Brett Favre a lot too. And, you know, he's like a slightly more accurate Blake Bortles. He's not afraid to make a throw, and he unlike Blake Bortles, he doesn't turn the ball over much.
Yeah, I had to send a silent apology to Andy Reid. when this all started, because I was thinking, man, you got rid of Alex Smith. He ain't really seen this kid. I mean, he's a quarterback whisperer. He actually is a great evaluator of talent, because who saw this coming, right? I mean, it helps to have Tariq Hill as a receiver and you know, the pieces that he has. And, yeah, Travis Kelce, who is – I love that guy. But nonetheless, I think Andy Reid is the right coach for him. Right. Mm-hmm. I think Andy Reid will be able to throttle him down. He's going to have to. I mean, it's kind of like the comment that Naj made a little earlier, the caller made a little earlier around, you know, kind of blackjack. I think, you know, everything's kind of hitting right now. But what happens when, you know, teams have film on him, right? Because you don't really have a lot on him. So he's kind of, you know, the benefactor of that right now. So they're going to have to calm that Brett Favre-ish quality about him down. But I think overall, you know, I think he's more than a Blake Bortles. You know, is he superstar material. Right now, I don't see Super Bowl written on him right now, but he's fun to watch. I can definitely say that.
All right, Coach.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. One thing I'll say about him, I think he has the right coach. I think that has a lot to do with your career. He fits into that system very, very well. The Brett Favre quality, I think that's a bit of a stretch right now. He still got a couple of years before I would give him those, that type of leverage as a quarterback. But it's going to be interesting to see what Andy Reid does with him. I mean, he most definitely knows what he likes in him. And I think that he will do exactly what Reggie said. He'll throttle him down. He'll calm him down. He'll make sure that he's becoming more cerebral to the game. He most definitely, athletically has the talent and fits what they have, and he has the weapons that can help him. So, again, it's going to be interesting to see. And I think, Reggie, you're pointing to the bigger question that still remains to be answered. What happens now once they get the film on? The same thing we said when Prescott entered in at Dallas. Once the film is there and once they can now take what he did in college, take what he does in this offensive system, see how it plays itself out, then we'll be able to see a little bit more, probably a little faster this year and most definitely next year when everybody has the 16 games. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think that he's most definitely a competitor. I think he fits their system well. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback as long as he can stay healthy. He has a lot of room to grow. But once the defensive coordinators get the film and they go off into the offseason into their caves and begin to break him down and come out next year, that's going to be the true telltale sign of how well he adjusts to his sophomore year at that position as he is right now, where they don't have a lot on him and he's kind of just making plays.
Right. And real quickly, Coach, I know he's only had three starts at this point. He had one last year, I think, and two this year. But if you were the opposing defensive coordinator with I'll give you Atlanta's defense because it might take a while if we go to the Packers. With Atlanta's defense, how would you game plan around getting at Patrick Mahomes?
Well, I would give him a multitude of things to look at. One thing I would do first and foremost is pressure him a lot. Mm-hmm. What does he do under the pressure consistently? Secondly, I would give him a lot of different looks when it comes to the defense. How well does he register and transfer that information into being able to go into audibles? So those are the kind of things I would do to him now while he's young. I mean, he'll learn it, but right now just mixing a lot of things up and throwing a lot of things at him and see what sticks and what doesn't stick would be my formula going in at him. I would just really, really put a lot of pressure on him and make him get the ball out quicker. And also then at times put him in situations where he has to really think about what we're going to do defensively and move and shift some things around. So what it appears to be doesn't necessarily end up what it's going to be in the defensive call itself.
I think that's a pretty good game plan. That's better than anything I could come up with. What about you, Reggie?
No, same thing. I agree. I don't, you keep giving them looks. I mean, that's the thing with some of these kids, man, they're very few are taught to actually read defense, right? That's why I'm anxious to really see what Baker Mayfield's going to do. I mean, he looks good on paper and he looks good on Hard Knocks and he looks good in pre, but what happens when you start getting guys like Coach Hill, who they're mad scientists when it comes to scheming for things like that, they start throwing those things at you. That's going to judge and see, what kind of guy this, what kind of player he is. So I'm pulling for him. I mean, he's definitely, he waited his turn. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens when they start scheming for him, and which I don't think it'll be late. I don't think it'll be next year. I think it'll be later on this year, to be honest.
Yeah. Yep. Because we're kind of seeing that with Garoppolo now. People got to see that last half of last season. They're like, oh, that's what you want to do. But I was just looking at Kansas City's schedule, see if they play Chicago this year, because I would like to see that defense against him. But unfortunately, they do not. So they would have to meet the Super Bowl, and nothing personal, Kansas City fans nor Chicago fans. You guys ain't going there. So
do they play Jacksonville?
Who, Kansas City? I feel like they might. Let me pull it back up.
That would be a good. That would be a good test.
Oh yeah,
I agree, Rich. I think that would be the litmus test for Memphis to see how well he goes against such a defense, a team like that that has probably the best defense right now in the NFL.
Right.
Ooh, you guys are going to get your wish in a couple weeks. Week 5, which is October 7th, it is a 1 o'clock game in Kansas City.
Oh, it's in Kansas City, too, yeah.
That's going to be fun.
There you have it. That's going to be the game that actually starts his resume, in my opinion. I think everything else is a resume builder, but this is going to be the thing that eats on his resume.
Yep,
right.
And, you know, that's a foregone conclusion pretty much that in a couple weeks that will be a game we pick because I'm already thinking about the possibilities of that one.
And I'd like to add a footnote
right
in, guys, and that's provided that all of Jacksonville's starting personnel on defense is healthy and playing. It also plays a role.
Right. Right, right. As if they are as is, correct.
Yep, that's
the
that's
weather.
What
the weather
to
might
me.
Have. Well, I don't know. I don't think the weather even factors with these guys anymore. They proved that last year. So,
not well. And that's Kansas City in October. It's not Kansas City in December. So, you know,
right,
I don't think it's going to matter that much on a 1 o'clock game. But let's see. We got a couple more notes. We'll get into our picks and then two non-football related because. Once again, we listen to the fans, and you guys don't want to hear about football the entire time, so we do have a few of those notes. The Packers-Vikings game, as good as it was, ends in a 29-29 tie. Not that surprising, but this is 2 weeks in a row now that we've seen a tie. It's just something that fans need to get used to because based off the way the new structures are and the new rules and things like that, you're just going to start seeing a lot more ties because the overtime rules – only benefit a team if they can score on that first drive. If you don't score on the first drive, then it's really a coin flip to see if you're going to score at all.
Yeah, I think they're going to, you know, and I thought at some point they talked about kind of looking at what the college game does for ties. But, you know, that the ties are fine. I think I hate to see it happen in the sense of this particular game. Given, and I know we're not going to jump into it, but the whole controversial, you know, tackle, which, again, clearly was the end of the game, and you know, whatever. So, if it's true head-to-head combat, you know, two teams are just not it that way, okay, great. But I think ultimately they need to probably take a look and see what, you know, try to mimic a little bit of what the college game is going to look like because, you know – it affects playoff seedings too much, right? One of these teams won't get in because of that tie, and they may deserve to, right? So
one of them may get in because of the tie.
Correct.
Because a tie may not be a win, but it's not a loss either, and it usually really jumbles things up. But now we have four teams already that have ties on their record, so we can already kind of see the way that playoff thing's going to go.
Right.
What up? That was the thing that I wanted to add, and that it's not a loss. And in the case of the NFC, it's most definitely going to play a role with Atlanta because, again, when it comes down to the tiebreakers and them both having the points, that's what's going to make the difference when Atlanta plays both of those teams. It's going to come down. That's how it's going to work out for both of those teams. It's going to be based upon the points that Atlanta has against or doesn't have against either one of those organizations. That'll determine where their faith is going to lie when it comes down to the playoffs.
Yep. And as far as that hit, Reggie, I will just say this, that that hit was by Clay Matthews, who every time he has ever hit anybody, never hurts them. He usually hurts himself. He usually ends up getting injured because he braces like he did on this one. He braces to just pull you to the ground and try to safely get you both to the ground. And, you know, he tackled Big Ben a couple years ago and, like, dislocated his thumb in the process. And even Big Ben said, I don't know why he just didn't just drive me into the ground because he ended up getting hurt.
Well, that's the thing. I think at some point these refs are going to have to learn to take into account the player. I mean, if you're talking about Ndamukong Suh, that's something different. But when you're talking about a Clay Matthews who has his whole career has never gone maliciously after anybody, I mean, come on. I mean, you got to consider your audience, right? So, and as a defensive player, Ray Lewis said it best on Inside the NFL. He said, I couldn't play in this era because how do you tackle a quarterback now? You can't hit him high. You can't hit him below the knees. Now you
can't
hit him.
The ground.
You know, to me, that was a textbook tackle, in my opinion. And then for them to the NFL to come back and say, oh yeah, that was a right call. I mean, I'm confused. I don't know what a catch is, and I don't know what a tackle is. So, hey.
No. Before you know it, we won't know what a field goal or a touchdown is. So that's where we're headed. But I think Coach is going to have to he's got something coming up here in a second. So I'm going to go ahead and move us on to the picks. I do have Cody's picks on top of this. So let's see. We did get to hear Homer earlier just because we all know I go out of my way to try to find places for Homer in this broadcast. But we got some pretty good games to pick this week. So let's start with Denver at Baltimore. This Denver has shown that they are a little better than people thought they would be this year so far, and Baltimore is proving that they got a few kinks to work out if they're going to be the perennial favorite people think they are. Reggie, we'll start with you. Who do you have?
I'm gonna go with Denver. I don't believe in Baltimore. I don't believe in. I think they're fool's gold. I'm gonna go with Denver.
Okay, Coach.
Denver.
I'm so far behind that I need to pick Baltimore, but I just the thing is with Denver, I feel like Case is going to do pretty well as a quarterback. He's going to do pretty good for him for a while, but I really think their guy of the future is Chad Kelly, who was Mr. Irrelevant last year in the draft. He's Jim Kelly's nephew. I keep saying their guy of the future, possibly after this year, is Chad Kelly. So. In a way, I want Denver to kind of go middle of the pack, so they'll put him in, but I don't want that to happen to Case. There's something about Baltimore that just tells me that somehow they're going to figure this out without Lamar Jackson. I think he was just drafted to make Joe Flacco play better, which he has. So just because I need to catch up, I'm going Baltimore. So, Coach, let's move to the next one. It's the Battle of Los Angeles. We have the Chargers at the Rams, which technically means they just move over a dressing room. But who do you have?
I have the Rams in this. I think the Chargers are upcoming, and they do have some consistency there, but I don't think they have enough defensively against Los Angeles firepower. I think Los Angeles is a better balanced team right now.
All right. I guess I forgot to mention that Cody also had Denver on that last one. Cody has the Rams. Reggie, who do you have?
Yeah, I'm going with the Rams as well. I mean, there's too much there. I'm like Coach. I think the Chargers, I like what they're building, but the Rams right now, those guys are just – they're on another level right now.
Yep. I like Phillip Rivers. I do think the Chargers are kind of a dark horse. If they can make the playoffs, they're good enough to win in New England if they had to. They're probably good enough to win in Pittsburgh if they had to, but – for the first time this season.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
I got the Rams, so we completely agree. They're just too loaded. That defensive line alone, not even front seven, just I think that defense is going to be way too much. The Chargers always get dinged up. So we got Rams all the way through. Now let's move on to Pittsburgh at Tampa Bay. Coach, we'll start with you. Who do you have?
Right now, I think that I'm going to have to go. It's in Tampa Bay. The game is in Tampa Bay, correct?
It is in Tampa.
Okay, I'm going to have to go with Tampa Bay. I think they're riding the wave right now. I think with all of the issues that they have right now with Pittsburgh, I don't think they just right now are focused enough to beat a Tampa. Are they better than a Tampa Bay? In my opinion, roster-wise, yes. But right now, their focus is not there. And I think right now they have a bigger fish to fry call trying to refocus themselves. So I'm going to take Tampa in this game only because of where it is and what's going on right now.
Yeah, I'm also taking Tampa, and I think they're like you said, they're still riding the Fitzmagic carpet. I think they're going to have a Fitzmagic moment in this game to pull it out. And what do you think, Reggie?
Yeah, I for all the same reasons, I'm going to go Tampa. I wish it would be Pittsburgh, obviously, because they're a division team.
Right.
But I just don't think they're going to have the focus. I mean, 1 week in a couple of days isn't going to fix it. So maybe next week, maybe they'll hit the panic button. But for this week, I just think Tampa's going to be too much.
Yep. So for everybody who thought maybe we'd go and hear the homer button a second time, you can blame Cody Elias on that one, who took his homer pick of Pittsburgh. So we will pass out Cody's phone number at the end of the show if you want to call and tell him how mad you are that he did not agree with us. But instead of telling it right here live, we are going to move on to our last game. And, of course, that's going to be the Falcons game. The New Orleans Saints will and the Houdat Nation will be in Atlanta. I'm sure that tailgate will be ridiculous, whether you meet up with Reggie down by the Gulch area or whether you hit up the Yellow Lot with Mark and the Grill Master out with the Falcoholics. Just for the sake of getting it out of the way, Reggie, who do you have?
Hey, you already know. I like what I saw with Matt Ryan last week. And that's really honestly the main reason why I'm going this route and not just looking outside of myself. I like what I saw out of Matt. And if he plays the way he played last week, and there's not going to be very many teams that can beat him.
All right. Coach?
I'm going with Atlanta. I'm already predicting them to be in the Super Bowl early. I think this is the game. This is the telltale game. I think because they let Philly off the hook with their two-minute offense and didn't score in that game and secure that win in the bag for themselves, that they are going to have to come out and dominate. I think the defense is going to play lights out. This is going to be a great test for the defense. This is their warm-up game as they get ready to move to the back end of the season. So I got to give it to Atlanta. I think the way they beat them will be off of Matt Bryan's foot, but I think most importantly that they're going to do it through game management and controlling the clock. So I'm giving it to Atlanta.
Wow. Well, once again, everybody can be mad at Cody because he took the Saints for one reason or another. Maybe he's a Will Lutz fan like I am, but no, I got to go with not only the home team, I got to go with the team that will be playing in the building or that plays their home games where the Super Bowl will be this year. I got to go with the Atlanta Falcons. So I guess for the sake of it, since the three of us agree,
by that much.
I guess we'll play that now and we don't have it. But, I got Atlanta in that one. I just Matt Ryan doing his best John Elway impression, not just with the helicopter, but actually running when he had to. That's the Matt Ryan that even though it's not in his character, it's not in the type of quarterback he is. He has to evolve into that kind of quarterback if it's going to work.
He absolutely does, and what I tell a lot of people, if you could have seen the sideline when Matt Ryan made that last run, I think they gained a ton of respect. There were some players on that team that may not have had the ton of respect for him. They have it now, right? Just watching him kind of take charge and he actually, you know, yelled with the crowd and I remember telling Coach, hey, if we could see that Green Bay, Seattle Seahawks playoff Matt every game,
yeah,
we got a chance. We got a chance, man. That was incredible to watch that guy play. His throws were accurate. He didn't appear scared. He could have cared less what was going on around him. It was fun to watch. So kudos to Sterling Sharp and whomever else may have gotten under his skin. Because I think they woke a sleeping giant, man.
It might have been us on the show. we all know this is Matt Ryan's favorite show, so.
Right.
But to recap, let's see. Everybody but me has Denver. I took Baltimore in that one. We all have the Rams over the Chargers in what should be a good one. Let's see, Cody had Pittsburgh, all three of us had Tampa Bay in that one, and Cody took the Saints, we all took the Falcons in that one. I think, you know, we're in that weird time of the season where there's a handful of really good games on paper, and then the best games are going to be those ones that just those, you know, like, honestly, tonight's game. I'm going to get a little bit into it here in a second. But, Actually, we'll get into tonight's game, then we'll hit this other stuff and be done. I mean, tonight's game, you have Cleveland and you have the Jets. I like Sam Darnold. I like the mechanics I'm seeing. He reminds me a lot of Eli Manning as far as and Aaron Rodgers as far as his mechanics. It's very early. I'm not going to compare him to any of those in any other aspect but that. But basically what Todd Bowles told this kid after he threw that pick six on the very first pass he ever officially threw at the league, to paraphrase, Todd Bowles looks at his young quarterback and said, well, I'm glad you got that out of the way, so dust it off and go be a quarterback. Because, and, you know, Darnold's looking at him like, what do you mean by that? And he's like, at some point you were going to throw one, so I'm glad you went ahead and got it out early. So, you know, move on and keep playing.
Yeah, I do like what I see out of the kid, but I also think that there's something special that's happening in Cleveland under Hugh Jackson. It hasn't materialized yet, but I think if they give that guy some time, he's going to change what's going on up there. He has the talent. I just think it's like Landry said on the infamous, you know, episode, you know, it's
right.
Contagious, right? So they just have to get past what has always been, and Cleveland's going to be, you know, I was not looking forward to us going up there to play him. They're no longer the joke of the NFL, you know. So this could be their coming out party.
Yep, it definitely could. And when I was talking to a bunch of football fans earlier today, because I said, hey, who do you guys have in the game? And there was actually a Browns fan. He said, well, you obviously know where I'm at. And there was a Jets fan who said, well, you obviously know where I'm at. But everybody else, some of them were like, well, this game doesn't really concern me. And I was like, it does. And other ones would say one way or the other. I said, look, these are two teams that are trying to prove to everybody that they are better than expectations and that they are better than they were last year, because they were very big disappointments last year. These are two teams with something to prove. I'm not sure where the game is at. Is it in Cleveland?
Yes, sir, it is. It's in Cleveland. Yep.
Okay. Because honestly,
and I know those
people,
I know those Cleveland fans want to get those beer cans, or what is it, beer lockers that are all over the city.
Oh yeah.
Wow, they want
what a great thing, right?
Right.
But I mean, who do you have in a game like that? Because I'd love to see. Honestly, given what the Browns' schedule is after tonight, this is one of their best opportunities to put a win on the board. And they've been really close in the past previous weeks to you know, really kind of shining a little bit. But you can't discount the Jets. You can't discount this Darnold kid. I honestly think Cleveland's going to win this in a nail-biter.
Yeah, I think this is Cleveland's coming out party, to be honest. I think they're gonna win this game. I can see that happening.
Yeah, I really don't think it's gonna impact Hugh Jackson being the coach past the bye week. I still think he's gonna be out, because I think their interim coach is on their team currently. But we're not any closer to seeing Baker Mayfield. Everybody's gonna have to wait on that, which is gonna be better, because trust me, when the kid gets in, you're gonna see it. But Tyrod Taylor. Because he's not Tyrod Taylor anymore. He's Tyrod Taylor. It's kind of like Leroy Glover being Leroy Glover,
right?
You know. Dion had the best line. He goes, what is this Leroy Glover? And somebody said, what? What do you mean? He said, back at FSU when I played with that guy, he was Leroy. Now he's Leroy out of nowhere. He goes, where did that come from? But now he's Tyrod Taylor, who is playing good enough to still be in. He's a good – he's probably above average as far as his actual skill set. So I think it's going to be a good game. I like that it's a Thursday game, because that means it's the only game on. These two teams deserve the attention they're going to get. And it's not a big enough game to be a Sunday or a Monday night. So I'm glad this is the perfect time spot for it.
Agreed. I'm actually looking forward to the game, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. In talking about it, I reminded myself to turn on the TV here at the new studio. So we have the pregame on now, so that the producer will quit giving me some sort of hand signal. I think he's my number one fan. I'm not sure yet. But we know how the producers around here are, so I apparently am his number one fan. That's great. But let's see, a couple other things, and then we will be on our merry way. Do you think the Bills are tanking, or do you just think they're just not that good?
I just think they aren't that good. I think they aren't that good. I don't think they're tanking at all. I don't see a lot in them. I mean, especially, you know, now that Shady's kind of hurt a little bit, and I actually believe what Jalen Ramsey said about Allen. I don't think he's going to be as good as anybody thought he was going to be. So, I just don't think they're that great. I just don't.
Well,
it's unfortunate.
I was about to say, as much as I want to lean towards them tanking, who are they tanking for? They just got who they think is their next quarterback, who they don't even have. Or I guess he's now starting to play and start for them and everything. But if they already have that guy, who are you tanking for? You don't tank for anybody but a quarterback. So I just at this point, I think they're just trying to put it together, and they're just not that good. So they're in a bad division where Miami's having a decent year, and the Jets have their guy, and they're already starting to roll. Obviously, there's Brady and Belichick on the other side. They're just kind of odd man out, so they're just kind of hanging around in limbo.
Right. Yeah, I think people even forget about them sometimes. They blow the bill, so that's right. I forgot about the bill, guys.
I think
they're definitely hurting from letting Tyrod Taylor go a little earlier than they probably should have. I think him and Kelvin Benjamin probably could have done some things up there.
Oh yeah, I absolutely agree. But I mean that's also the knock on Allen is or that's something that people have brought up is no matter how good he is, I mean, who is he really throwing to up there? I mean, Shady's hurt. You got Benjamin, you said, but I mean, how reliable really is he? As talented as he is, how reliable is he? I feel like if he was more reliable, he'd still be with Cam.
Yeah, true.
But let's see, a couple more things. The Bears-Seahawks game surprisingly shifted the other direction to what most people thought it would be, but the pick six by Muka Murray ended up being the ultimate, with about 6.5 minutes to go, the ultimate kind of dagger. I think Russell Wilson finally realizes that not only is this team very offensive-minded and that he is literally going to have to put them on his shoulders to carry them, but he also realizes that in a couple years – you want to avoid the franchise tag.
Yeah, two things I took away from this game is, A, Khalil Mack definitely makes the Bears better than what they probably are.
They already had a scary defense with Roquan and people like that that finally get to play, but he was the missing cog in that wheel. He is the Whitney Merciless that when he's in the game, that defense is on a whole nother level.
Yeah, he is definitely what $100 million defensive player looks like. Just the way he took that game over. That I saw in him, too, just what you said, and that Russell Wilson has no help. He is just him. The whole team, and I don't
know
if he has the ability to take it over.
Well, they have no Doug Baldwin, who is his number one failsafe. He's the security blanket for Russell Wilson is Doug Baldwin. He's tall. He's fast on the outside. They got rid of Jimmy Graham. They let him go. So he is on that team. But, I mean, even Paul Richardson's gone. All these other guys that used to be great complements to that offense, to be a team that they said were basically going to shift from defense to offense, it's not like they really added any game breakers on the offensive side. And at least the offensive line's not the airport terminal that it used to be. But they're still not really slowing anybody down.
Right. I was going to say they aren't far from it. But they have no running game. I mean, it's they got some problems there. They've got some problems there. I think defensively they can hold their own if the offense could stay on the field a little bit. But,
yeah,
Russell just has nobody. He has nobody right now.
No.
So going to be a long year for those guys.
No, their offensive line is like that gate at horse races. All of a sudden, the gun to start the race goes off, and that gate moves out of the way, and it's just we're all off to the races.
Right.
But, yeah, the Seahawks, I mean, it's everybody else is going to benefit from this. I don't think the 49ers are ready to make that step, but you got the Rams in that division. Who knows what the Cardinals are going to do? I think them and the Bills are looking at who's going to get the number one pick at this point. But,
right.
I mean, if the 49ers can string together – eight or nine wins, they might be looking pretty decent on that side.
Yeah, possibly.
And then we can't get out of here without talking about the what was this? This was the Thursday night game last week, I believe. The Bengals and the Ravens. The Ravens still being one of the perennial favorites, like the Chargers. A lot of people have them even as far as the Super Bowl, and a lot of people have them at least in the playoffs. I think it's potential. They're due for either an up year or a complete shakeup, and there's a chance that happens too. But the Ravens only scored 23 points against the Bengals, who I thought was going to be a top three pick team this year. As far as I just thought they were not going to be very good. Maybe it was just the way this lined up. But Andy Dalton, 4 touchdowns, 265 yards. 3 of them go to A.J. Green. And let me just throw this out here for all the Falcons fans that said, you know, hey, if they can feature A.J. like that, why can't we feature Julio? We're talking about apples and kumquats at this point. They're completely different animals, completely different fruits. Let's keep them away from that. Two different teams, two different schemes. But, I mean, Dalton literally looked – I don't know why I'm on the term literally this week, but I guess I am. But Dalton looked as good as he did at TCU. This is the Dalton that we all wanted to see. He's healthy. He had a bunch of weapons going on there. One of the big discussion questions that we – familiar with the band Nickelback.
Hello?
Are you still there?
Oh, yeah. I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I missed the last part of that.
I said, are you familiar with the band Nickelback?
I am familiar.
And you know how basically when everybody who used to dump on Creed and Limp Bizkit, when those bands kind of fizzled off, they pretty much moved to Nickelback. Nickelback continues to sell out arenas. They continue to sell records. They make a lot of money. They make good music, pretty good music. I'm a big fan of theirs. But great live show. But for some reason, there's that small percentage that just dump on them, no matter what they do. They're the butt of all the jokes.
Right.
In a way, here's my point, I think, is in a way, is Andy Dalton the Nickelback of NFL quarterbacks? Because he's always dumped on. We make him the butt of a lot of jokes, too. But the guy continues to just get it done. It's just he's on a team that's not good enough to make it, you know, beyond the first week of the playoffs.
And I think there it is right there. I mean, remember, Matt Ryan was the same way, and he's still going to be probably consummately the same way because of the Super Bowl loss. But nonetheless, for a while, it was he can't win the Super, he can't win in the playoffs, can't win in the playoffs, can't win in the playoffs.
Right.
And it wasn't until he won that he got out of that discussion. And I think that's the same thing that is the same case with Andy Dalton. I had Icky Woods was here, as you know, is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Shout out
yep.
to Icky. He'll actually be here for in Atlanta when we play those guys here in a couple of weeks or next week.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'll make sure you guys get a chance to meet. He's been saying he needs to get with you and you guys chop it up. But nonetheless, he says the same thing. He says, hey, you know, the expectation is, hey, we know we're going to win in a regular season. We're going to do decently. We are going to get to the first round. But what happens at that first round game? And I think until he gets over that hump, he's going to be seen as, and no pun intended, the redhead stepchild. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
So he's got to clear his mind and just keep playing his game. He looked fantastic last week. And just play your game. Take the pressure off yourself. And you've got Tyler Boyd, who's got – you've got A.J. I mean, just if they can stay healthy – particularly on defense. It looks like Mixon's out a couple of weeks, but, I mean, Giovanni Bernard is more than willing or capable.
Sure.
Those guys could be a dark horse. I think Cincinnati can be a dark horse team that will surprise some guys if they can quietly stay healthy and quietly just continue to win.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Now, let me throw this out as we finish up the Andy Dalton talk here. I bash Blake Bortles, but I give Andy Dalton 10 minutes. It's just the way this show goes, apparently. First of all, if you take out Matt Ryan's MVP year, the outlier year, basically, him and Andy Dalton have almost identical numbers. It's really crazy. I used to think Cal Herd was just dumping on Matt Ryan when he did that, but if you actually go back and look, it's a really great point. But the thing about Dalton, do you think he ends his career in Cincinnati, or do you think he moves on somewhere in the next couple years?
I think he's gone when Marvin Lewis is gone.
Honestly. I agree. I think it's a perfect opportunity to start over, start new, and one of these teams are going to look around and go, we're not ready to draft the next guy, or we need somebody to kind of mentor him a little, our new guy. Andy, how about you come in for a couple years? And, I mean, just think what he could do on some of these other teams.
Listen, if you put that guy on a Jacksonville, that's the piece.
Oh, yeah.
That's the piece.
Although I was thinking a better fit, but I think a potential destination, just because of their situation, I think is a little further south of Jacksonville. What if he was in Miami?
I was thinking Miami too.
Miami might be a good fit.
That was actually my first thought.
Yeah, I mean,
that was my first thought. But just to be that guy, every team has that one piece that they're missing to put them over the hump.
Right.
I think Jacksonville is quarterback, and I think he's that guy that would be different. He'd be the difference maker for Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I honestly believe that.
Yeah. But last couple notes, and we will get out of here because the game should be starting in about 10 minutes or so. Two non-football related topics here real quick. Jacob deGrom of the Mets sets a Major League Baseball record. He has 26 straight starts where he has gave up three or fewer runs. It has never happened. He broke the record in doing that, and even though he's on the Mets, who average giving him about one run a game, he's like 6-11 on the year. But given that stat, that 26 straight starts, giving up less than three runs, do you think you should get the Cy Young for the NL?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think regardless of what his team is doing, I mean, those are outstanding numbers for any starter. So absolutely, why not? Why not? I can't think of anybody that, at least in the NL, that's you know, performing at that level. I mean, has that type of record. So no.
Yep, not for that long. I mean, it's one of those where, especially in pitching, pitchers are always tied to their records, even though it's not all 100% them. The same way that quarterbacks and coaches are tied to the records, even though it's not all them. I mean, like I said, you know, Big Ben took the loss this week, but he looks on the board and goes, "We scored 37 points. That's not my fault that we gave up 42. I'm not on defense."
Right. Agreed.
Maybe he should be at this point because he's got to be better than some of the things they've been doing.
Right.
But the last thing is Canelo Alvarez defeated Triple G by a majority decision, even though both of them promised they would knock the other out. This is kind of like UFC to a point where I'm going to knock you out. No, I'm going to knock you out. And then it goes to judge's decision. We all get a little perturbed about it. You know, congratulations to Canelo Alvarez for now being the middleweight champion and ending Triple G's big winning streak. Do you think they're going to fight a third time?
I think so. I think that's where the money is. I haven't seen this fight. But I heard the uproar about it. I'm waiting for HBO to rebroadcast. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, much like you're hearing now that Floyd is talking about fighting Pacquiao again. I mean, it's a money chase at this point. I think UFC is now the new boxing, so why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep, exactly. It's boxing has got to do this. I think Conor and the McGregor Mayweather thing kind of showed them. It's like, you guys have to go more circus, like more WWE. Like if you want to attract, that's all. You got to get something to get them to buy tickets because, you know, boxing doesn't have a lot going right now.
No, it does not. It does not. It doesn't have the draw.
No, it doesn't. Unlike this show that is everybody's favorite.
Hey, we're the trendsetters, man.
We are. We are the crest of the wave of entertaining sports talk.
Right.
at least that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Hey, I like it.
Obviously, shout out to Coach Reggie. It was great having you back on as well. I think that I think we've knocked out everything and then some. Shout out to Naj. Hopefully he listens to the rebroadcast, or hopefully his friends do, where they listened live and got to hear him. Definitely, as we said, Naj, do not be a stranger. We actually took note of your number so that that when we see it, we know it's you. And always fun to get – we always get those good, educated callers. So I'm glad we were able to get him on and talk like that. And who knows, Reggie, you might run into him at a game.
Right. Rise up.
Exactly. But that's going to do it for us this week. As I said, shout-out to Cody and Coach, and you as well, Reggie. Shout-out to Naj for helping make this show great. This has been Sports Club on Impact Media and Blog Talk Radio. We will see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
I got them shaking, they boobies like Congo, man. I'm shaking the city like Quake. I hate it blue in the face like John Joker. I'm breaking the cake, so let's bake. I'm taking the game's mine. Y'all witness the change, it's my time. Yeah, I'm new to the game, but y'all might wanna say you whack rap, stay light, save the time. I can dance, homie, I don't choose hell. Y'all looking at something like a true player. A girl told me that a man that can dance might could possibly get down with the tool in his pants. Now I'm a lady, let me see it vibrate. And when it's over, you ain't gonna need your bird. Cause I'm a pro, make you bend your back low, then the pound it real fast, just like the percolator.
Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah. Wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, baby, wobble, yeah.
Thank you. Was that not clear without the bam? Yeah, okay. Bam! What?